The story of God told through the land of Israel is written in the pages of Scripture and carved by the very finger of God into the land itself. Join us on a journey to discover your spiritual roots. Uncover the six essential elements of identity deep within you, revealed through the life of King David and perfected in the life of Jesus. The fourth season of Real Encounters with God, Downline. All new, on location in Israel. New places, new encounters, real encounters with God.
All right, we're back in Israel for Real Encounters with God. Talk about these real stories that really happen with real people having these encounters. Mm-hmm. Got Hannah, Brian, our guide Suriel. And today we're talking about one of these six elements of identity, this primal DNA we have, warrior. Yeah. Tell us about that.
Everyone knows and loves the story of David going against Goliath. Even if you've never read the Bible, you heard that story, and it taps something deep inside of us. Mm. Because actually in our DNA, I believe it's a character quality that's buried inside of us, an identity of being a warrior. Mm. And this is what we see in David, and I want to help people see today that this is who you've been created to be, a warrior that's meant to take rounds and fight things and go forward. It's in you. I don't have to work you up. It's in you. It may be just too covered up.
And so the logical place to go might be...
Of course.
Where David slay Goliath? How does that sound?
Sounds perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which would be...
The Elah Valley.
Nice.
And it's a great location, okay, 20 miles from Bethlehem. When you open the Bible, when you read the verses of the location itself, you see all those Philistines, you know, military outposts are still there with the same names even today. And the Israelites are standing from one side and the Philistines from the other side, and the valley of Elah, between the two armies. And David, of course, is being sent by his father to go and see what's happening there. And he finds himself in a battlefield, and we're going to see what he's about to do. And everyone knows the end of that, but that's the perfect location, which is still there. We can still see everything the same as it used to look like 3,000 years ago.
It's really an amazing place. It looks exactly like it would have looked. Mm-hmm. It's undeveloped.
And thanks God we still have this valley as a place that we can see. These days, you know, there is a city behind it that is growing bigger and bigger and bigger, and I don't know for how long we will still be able to see the site as it was 3,000 years ago.
And it's the site. It's not like, it's not a recreation
or anything.
Like, it is that's just incredible.
Everything, I mean, David would walk through the same hills and the same valley and the brook. Everything is the same. Nothing has changed.
Wow.
That's impressive. That's incredible. I mean, that Saul was really the likely person to win that battle, and he did it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to talk about that when we actually get to the site. But Saul was Israel's giant. He was a head taller than everybody else in the nation. And David takes down Goliath with a slingshot. Malcolm Gladwell did a book not too many years ago about how that actually gave David advantage. He was bringing a different underdog kind of weapon.
Yeah.
The crazy thing is, not only was Saul the giant for Israel, he's from the tribe of Benjamin, that the book of Judges says the people in Benjamin could use a slingshot and hit something the width of a hair.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So Saul not only was qualified stature-wise, but he had the tools, he had the ability to do it himself, but he didn't have that primal DNA uncovered of being a warrior like David did and like all of us do.
Yeah, I love that story. And of course, we love David, but we also love Jesus. And so we're talking about him and what that means to be a warrior. And so what's the location that makes sense for that?
Well, we thought, of course, Jesus was spending 3 years mostly in Galilee up in the north. And there is a fortress, used to be there, a fortress on top of a city, and the name was Gamla. We know that there were zealots that were gathering there against the Romans later on during the revolt. We know that there is one of, if not the oldest synagogue that was found in Israel from Second Temple period. So there is a great possibility, of course, that Jesus himself was entering to that city, not during the revolt. He was 40 years before, but still going there from one synagogue to the other, preaching to the people, talking to the people, bringing their new message. And also, you know, it's a place eventually that had war and battle and death.
So this is like the town of the warriors. We know that one of the disciples, Simon the Zealot, had this in his background. We don't know if he was from Gamla. We can't say that for certain, but for sure, Jesus attracted warriors into his ministry.
Warriors are being attracted to warriors. You know, when you see a leader who is a warrior, you follow him, you trust him.
Yeah.
And when you see those zealots, in a sense, people that are willing to fight for their faith and way, Jesus was also attractive in that sense. Again, the spirit of a warrior.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's
super good. We're going to go off with you. There's a gamla.
So, finally, after a half a mile walk, here we are looking at the city known as Gamla. In Hebrew, Gamal, it's a camel. And you can see the way this hill looks like. It's like a camel.
What do you think? We're in the region of Galilee. Jesus, his ministry, a lot of it took place kind of right around this region. Gamla's not in the Bible, but what do you think the odds are that Jesus might have been here?
That's a good question.
Okay, we are very close to the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee, we are now, you know, the city itself is pointing southwest. Just a few miles from the Sea of Galilee, I would say there is a great possibility that Jesus would come over here.
Can you put a number on it? Come on.
What is that? 85%.
Oh, that's good. Okay, that's a passing grade. Yeah,
85% or more. Why? Wow. Because I think, again, Jesus spent 3 years. And it is one of those Jewish towns around the Sea of Galilee. Right. There is no reason that he wouldn't come here. It says that he would go from one village and town to the other. This is what the gospel is saying, into the synagogues teaching the people.
Mm. Well, that's encouraging that we might have an 85% chance of walking in some footsteps of Jesus today.
That's pretty,
pretty big.
Yeah.
And there's a from what I understand, there's a synagogue here.
Right.
From his time period.
Right. We're standing here. We're looking at, you know, most of the city is gone, but what is left is a part of a synagogue that was actually excavated and is still there. We can see it from here.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So there is a great chance, really a great chance that Jesus himself would also enter that city long before a wall was built, just entering to a city, visiting the synagogue and preach to the people.
Wow.
So during Second Temple period, there were a group of people that were, if I can call it radicals, there were all different groups. And those zealots were, in a sense, jealous, for the law, jealous for God, jealous for getting rid of the Romans. So they were known. They were not all together, the same groups, but still, this is what we call them, the zealots. Many of them were in Jerusalem. Many of them even got to Masada. But Gamla is one of those places that would also attract zealots with many other people into the city.
Okay, so this is the one of the places where these zealots were. I know there were many different towns around where they might have been, but I know one of Jesus's followers was Simon the Zealot. What do you think would attract a guy like that to Jesus?
It's interesting to think that such a guy would actually be attracted to Jesus, because Jesus wasn't radical in that sense. He didn't say, okay, take a sword and start to fight those Romans or anything like that. But he was radical with love your enemies and, you know, be willing to give your other cheek and so on. So maybe that was also something that, you know, made Simon think, what's that? You know, this guy knows what he's doing and where he's heading, and I want to follow him.
The reality is we kind of have zealots back in America. We got people who want to take a stand, who want to be on one side or the other and are willing to really do whatever it takes to get their point across. And so I know sometimes it's hard, but I see myself a lot in this. Yeah. And I sense a guy like Simon, why would he want to follow Jesus? What does Jesus have to say to him, like you just asked? But what would he say to us? What would he say to me? What would he say to the person that's watching this right now who does have a stand that sometimes we feel like is right to take, but we don't know the weapons to use. We don't know how long we should be in battle.
I think it's a great question. I think Jesus has a lot to say about it and to us today, just because I think there's a lot of that fight in us that Brian's saying. Like, that's actually a good thing. I want to go see the synagogue where Jesus might have actually Ben, can we walk over there?
Of course, it's waiting for us.
All right, let's go.
Simon the Zealot was potentially here. He was fighting for something. He was hoping to hear somebody that would come and tell him how to change, his current situation.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what Jesus did.
Yeah.
I don't know what your connotations of Jesus are. You might think of him as like the teacher or the really nice guy or the guy who let the children come to him. And he is all those things. But you might be surprised to learn that I think the very first words he says in his official ministry are the battle cry of a warrior. There's a scene in Nazareth, his hometown, right after his temptations. He goes away to the desert for 40 days. He's tempted. He comes back to Nazareth. He walks into a synagogue exactly like this one. People are gathered all around, and he asks for the scroll of Isaiah, and then he reads this. Luke 4:18, Jesus said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Jesus walks in and he's like, if you want to know what I'm fighting for, it's this. I'm coming to set the captives free. Now, interestingly, he says it's at the beginning of his ministry, but all the way through, people are confused about what he means because they think he means he's coming to set them free from the oppression of Rome, the same people who came and sacked this town. But that wasn't it. See, when it comes to this warrior mentality of fighting, Jesus changes the game on everything. See, most of us, by default, we fight for a kingdom, our kingdom. We fight for a country, our country. We want our will done, our will. But Jesus in Matthew 6, he says, when you pray, say, "Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. May your kingdom come. May your will be done." See, the fight that Jesus flips is to say, don't fight for your own kingdom, but fight for my kingdom. And then he changes the weapon that we use. This is the place of the zealot. We know that one of his disciples was Simon the Zealot. And that means that kind of jealousy that Cyril was talking about. The jealousy means I'm willing to do anything, even shed blood. And Jesus says, yeah, that's right. But not the blood of your enemies, your own blood, for their sake. In John 15:13, he said, "No greater love has anyone than this, that you lay down your life for your friends." See, the kingdom is different. What you fight for is different. And the weapon you use when you follow Jesus is radically different. It's not a weapon against somebody, but it's a weapon for them. The weapon is your own life, and you lay it down willingly. Now, if you wanted to fight this fight on a day-to-day basis, what do you do with it? But what you do is really simple. What could you do today to love the people around you, to lay down your life for them? Could you take out the trash? Could you wash the dishes? Could you put the kids to bed? Could you go get the groceries? Is there somebody in your life you could sacrifice for? See, when you do that, you're using the weapon that Jesus called us to use, love, and you're bringing the kingdom that he called us to fight for, his kingdom. A 130 miles away and 1,000 years earlier at the Valley of Elah, another unexpected warrior emerged. A 14-year-old shepherd boy, a direct ancestor of Jesus, faced a giant in his army.
Everybody knows the story of David and Goliath, right? Right, yeah. It's arguably the most often told story in all of human history. And I'm right here in the very place that took place in Israel at the Valley of Elah. Up here was the nation of Israel's armies. Down in the valley was the giant Goliath. Up the other side was the rest of the Philistine army. Now here's the thing. I know some of you are going like, oh, I've heard this before. And some of you are going, oh, I love this story. I want to hear it. Here's the thing. Knowing about this story is different than working about this story. This isn't an interesting story to tell children at bedtime. This is a primal story for you to tap into your DNA to be about the things that God wants you to be about in your life. You and I are made to be warriors, and we see that in David, this story. I'm going to help you unlock that in your life today. I think we identify so much with the David and Goliath story because all of us realize life is a fight. It is a fight. You're fighting something right now. You're fighting to find someone to date. You're fighting to get a passing grade. You're fighting to keep your marriage together. You're fighting to have a child. You're fighting for the health of your child. You're fighting to keep things together while an aging parent is dying. You're fighting to figure out what your purpose is. You're fighting the bully or wanting to get the courage to fight the bully inside of your school. You're fighting the credit card debt that's crushing on you. I could go on and on and on. There are things that are staring at us and trying to put us down, and you gotta make a decision. If you're gonna be a victim or you're gonna be a warrior. Do you wanna just passively allow things to happen or hope that somebody else is gonna do something about it or hope the government is gonna step in or hope that that giant is eventually gonna die on its own? Or are you gonna recognize that you've got inside of you primal DNA of a warrior? I don't care what gender you are. I don't care how much muscle or lack of muscle you have. Inside of you is the ability and desire to fight. Whatever that problem is, you have it in you, and you have to figure out if you want to take inspiration from David, this guy who is small, going up against his giant, if you want to feel like you want to go up against your giants, because all of our problems are like giants to us, or things that we haven't experienced before. As David comes up to bring lunch to his brothers, he comes 25 miles to bring lunch to his brothers. And his brothers are taunting him, like, oh, what are you doing here? You just don't want to work. A lot of times when we're dealing with a problem, a giant in our life, people around us aren't going to be supportive. They're going to think that we're shirking our responsibility, or we're making something up, or we're imagining something. Sometimes we're not going to get the support we need. We get this sense out of David. David is the one guy who's got to stand up and go forward. You've got to find a way to put on your warrior mentality to go after your giants. He decides to face the fight. You're going to face your fight or not? The person who should be fighting this fight is Saul. He's the current king of Israel, and he is the largest person in Israel. Before he's anointed king, it says that he's a head taller than everybody in the nation of Israel. This is kind of like MMA. Our biggest guy against your biggest guy, except Saul is refusing to fight. He's just hoping the problem goes away. The problem never just goes away. It just gets bigger and stronger and more present. And it starts having babies. And they start replicating problems. And more comes on us. And eventually we feel so overwhelmed that maybe then we want to justify our victim attitude instead of taking on our warrior mindset, the identity that God has given us to actually be a fighter. It's in you. It is. That's why David is so inspiring to us. It's God's way of stoking inside of us this warrior mentality of I can win this fight. I have to win this fight. These fights are all progressive. They build upon one another. It starts here and it goes there. It starts here and it goes there. Like the problem you're looking at right now is always a big problem. It's a giant problem. But so was the one that you faced last year and the year before that. In fact, once you faced a specific kind of problem, when you face that same problem, that's not a problem anymore because you know how to fight. You've done it before. You have confidence. But every new giant is a brand new problem, and it just freaks you and me out because we've never seen it before. It is daunting to us, but we build our muscle mass by taking on the smaller problems. David was a warrior, was always in him. We've got a little, look, we have a little visitor with us up here today. Who do we have? Oh, we have the lion. Is that the cowardly lion? Is it? If I were king of the forest, not prince, not duke, but king, if I were, no, enough of that, enough of that. No, that's actually not the cowardly lion from The Wizard of Oz. This is a replica of what David encountered as he progressively built bigger and bigger fights. He says this in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 34. But David said to Saul, "Your servant was tending his father's sheep, and a lion or a bear came and took a sheep from the flock. I went out after it, and I attacked it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. And when it rose up against me, I grabbed it by its mane and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has defied the armies of the living God. Did you notice what David was saying about the lion and the bear? He was saying, God was there. God did this with me. God empowered me in this. His secret sauce isn't just tapping into his warrior identity. It is the knowledge that God has progressively fueled his warrior identity. There's something magical about the idealism of youth. It's like when you're young, you don't know how stupid you are. I mean, it's probably pretty stupid to go after lions and tigers. It probably was. It might have been even a little stupid for a youngster to go after Goliath, but David doesn't care. He's got the idealism of youth. Hey, God's gonna be with me. I only live one life. Why not? Let's go for it. Some of us, we maybe gotten a little old in the tooth, and I'm talking right now about 25-year-olds who've just become overwhelmed by our fear. We're the most anxiety, fearful, ridden generation, arguably, in American history. And we've lost a bit of the pizzazz of what life could be like if we actually trusted in God and allowed him to fuel our warrior identity. Saul has lost the plot on this entirely. Not only is he this guy who's the biggest and not going against Goliath, but he also has this interesting scene, which is talked about a lot, where Saul tries to help David out by giving him his helmet and his breastpiece and his sword. And the story normally is told that, oh, they're too big for David. He can't handle them. Well, that's kind of true. But what we're really missing here is Saul had all that he needed to go into battle. He had the size. He had the wisdom that came with age. He had been in much, much more hand-to-hand battles with humans than David had. This is his first, as far as we know. And he had all of the weapons he needed. He had it all. I mean, people all the time who have what it takes to go against their giant, they just don't think they do. They just don't want to. It's a lack of faith, a lack of confidence in who God's made them to be. Whatever it is, they just won't pick up the sword. Or in David's situation, they won't pick up the sling. David, how did he take off all of this animals? Well, he's got an actual weapon, and it's known as the sling. Yeah, the sling. And he says, look, I've seen these lions and tigers, bears, I've seen all these things. And he gets some stones, and he recounts how he's killed these animals, sometimes with bare hands, sometimes with a sling. Got this replica right now. This is the sling that he would have used, just like it. And what you would do is you would spin this around, and then at the right time, you let it go right here. So it goes and hits the lion. So we see if I can do this. This should be fun. Let's see how we do. I hit something. I didn't hit the line. I hit someone breathing. I didn't hit the line. Sorry. Okay. Yes, things aren't that scripted here. He takes what he knows he can do, all the weapons at his disposal, and he goes and he runs towards the fight. I'm trying to get you to run to the fight. The last time I was up here, I wanted to reenact the whole thing. So David runs to Goliath, and the last time I actually ran down this path. I said, how cool would it be to be in Israel, the Valley of Elah, and just recreate the steps of David and run to the battle? And I started down this, and I gotta tell you, I hadn't run down a hill in a long, long time. Gravity pulls you forward. I thought, I'm just gonna jog down. No, gravity pulls you faster, and I literally could not stop, so I had to keep running faster, and gravity kept pulling me faster, and I was in a dead sprint on treacherous terrain. I thought for sure I was gonna smash my face open on the rocks. I'm not gonna do that again this time. I already did that once. So let's pick this up as David is running to the battle at the bottom of this hill. 1 Samuel 17, verse 8. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why have you come out to draw up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? Are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." And when Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. David runs quickly. And then he comes down to the brook, this very brook, this very stream that's dry right now, and he picks himself up a couple stones, a few stones. And he runs at the problem. For us to be taking down our Goliath, we've got to be in shape. Increasing numbers of Americans are just not in shape. 31% of everyone 17 to 24 is actually not eligible for the military because we weigh too much. Being in shape is important. Now, having said that, your Goliath may not demand more physical capacity. I find that my biggest giants aren't physical, they're emotional, they're spiritual. And the emotional and the spiritual giants are way more difficult for me than physical giants. I have to ask myself, am I physically training, emotionally training, spiritually training to be strong enough to go after it? How about you? Are you doing this? Do you need to be in counseling and therapy? Are you strengthening yourself emotionally? Do you have a prayer system, a way that you pray, a time that you pray? Do you have people in your life that you meet with regularly to bounce things off of and encourage? Do you actually have a Bible reading plan? These are just a few ways that you can get stronger. You can't take down your Goliath the way you are right now, or else Goliath would be down and he wouldn't be freaking you out. We have to prepare for the fight that God's given us. He's given us the identity to be a warrior, but we still have to train emotionally, spiritually, physically. These are the problems that freak me out, and they may be freaking you out, and God wants you to take them down. You're the one that's actually appointed and anointed to take down that Goliath. David made that his personal thing that he was going to fight and he was going to carry the day with. You and I need to do the same thing. As David has these stones, he's got his sling. He knows that this is his weapon. This is his tool. This is what he does. All of us have a weapon. We have tools at our disposal. Do you know what yours are? Some of us, it's just a natural God-given ability to have a charismatic personality. Maybe that's your thing in sales. Maybe you need to understand that that's your thing in sales, and you need to stay away from Zoom meetings and phone calls because there's something magical that happens when you're with the key account to keep or to land it. Maybe it's planning and Excel spreadsheets, which is definitely not me, but you just have an ability to see that A needs to go before B, which needs to go before C, and here's the speed of it. You're a great planner. That's a thing that God may have blessed you with to be able to take down that giant. One of my stones is I'm not a bad communicator. I can speak. I've always been able to speak before a group of people. It's never really freaked me out. I like speaking, specifically I like speaking about the Bible. It's a dream to be able to be here in Israel and talk about this stuff. But truth be told, it's not the speaking itself that I like. I speak because it's a stone in my hand to lead the church God has called me to. If I could figure out a way to lead Crossroads, speaking once a month, I'd probably do that. But I can't do that because it's a way that God has gifted me to take down the giants that are in the cities the Crossroads is in, the giants that are in people's mind by understanding what it means for God to come behind a church and fill people with his spirit inside of a church. What are your stones? What are your tools? You are created to know these things because you're created to go after big things. You're created to conquer untamed wilderness. You're created to be a warrior. God has created you this way. It is inside of you. You need to dust it off. You need to work your inner warrior out and you need to go after the giant that is before you because God has anointed and appointed you to go after that addiction. He's anointed and appointed you to go after that trauma. He's anointed and appointed you to deal with that issue in the community. No one's coming around. David said, if no one's in, I'm in because God has wired me this way. This giant that I'm gonna run at right now is kind of odd. It's the perspective is this thing doesn't look very big. It's all a matter of perspective. This is very big. It's at least 15 feet high, at least. And David comes before Goliath in 1 Samuel 17, and he basically gives God glory and he trash talks at the same time. Here's what he says. 1 Samuel 17:45. Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with the sword and with the spear and with the javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day, the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, and all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." David says, "I got you. I'm not intimidated by you. I'm not gonna be intimidated by my own fears. I'm not gonna play it safe." I think David very likely had some fears. I think David very likely had an element in his mind. It's like, can I really do this? But he knows with God on his side and him tapping into the identity that God's given him, he can do this. He says, "Dude, I'm gonna take your head off. I'm gonna take your head off. I'm gonna feed you to the birds." And he actually runs the battle like you and I need to run to our Goliath. That looked a lot more epic in my mind. Maybe not. Goliath is down. David comes up, takes Goliath's sword, lifts it high, bam! Takes off his head, lifts it up, shows all the warriors, all the fellow warriors, and victory ensues. Exactly what David said would happen happens. Goliath becomes bird food. Yesterday's giants that you conquer ends up tomorrow's fertilizer for your future spiritual life. You know, hanging on here reminds me, it's maybe the right way to finish our time together today. Because it could be so over-the-top cinematic to talk about taking down Goliath with violent means and all that stuff. And let's be honest, most of us, hopefully none of us, are ever going to have to take down Goliath by violent means. But this thing I'm doing right here, hanging on, that's probably the way we are. I'm getting older in life, and so I'm reading more about keeping myself in shape and trying to live as long as possible. And one of the guys I follow is a doctor by the name of Peter Attia. He specializes in living long-term. He says the first third of your life, you basically live by not doing something stupid, an accident. Then all the way through your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, he says the main game is great cardio. Get that heart pumping, get that blood going to ward off stuff that might be coming into your heart. And then he says the last decade or two of life, you know what the most important thing is? To increase your longevity? Grip strength. It's because you're old and you're a little more frail and your leg muscles aren't as strong as you trip and you gotta grab something and to keep steady yourself, because as you get older, when you go down and break a hip, the likelihood of you recovering decreases significantly. So the best thing to increase your lifespan is to work on grip strength. He recommends being able to get to a place where you can actually hang on a chin-up bar for 2 minutes straight. That's a goal. Sometimes you have no idea what weapon to use against your Goliath. Sometimes you know there's actually nothing you can do. You may be in a marriage that's going nowhere because your spouse is dealing with stuff or actually not dealing with stuff. And you've tried your coaching, your cajoling, maybe your shaming, maybe your counseling, and nothing's, it's just not worth it working. And what you just hang on, hoping that the presence of God overtakes. David would call this waiting on the Lord. You wait in the Lord. When Jesus is on a cross as his warrior self on a cross, dying for us, he's waiting on the will of God to do in his life on that cross what any of our power couldn't do, and he's just hanging on the cross. You get a bad medical illness, you're doing everything you can, your child is, and you just hang on. You're just not turning the corner financially, and you're doing all you can to make progress, but you're just not. You just keep doing the right things and hanging on. You've got a problem, a trauma, a memory that you're working, it's just getting gone, but you just hang on. That is the life of faith. Hanging on as your warrior self is equipped to hang on, because sometimes that's the only thing a warrior can do, is hang on and wait on God. I'm gonna trust you're gonna figure out when you're to run, when you're to hang on, when you're to punch, and when you're to sit. But you cannot figure out anything if you're not going to own the primal desire and capacity you have to be a warrior. It's in your DNA.
Next week on Real Encounters with God, we uncover David as father. One of his greatest failures will teach us what not to do and how Jesus actually reveals the true heart of a father to us all. The six essential identities God has woven into our primal DNA are the key to having a life that works. Don't miss out on discovering your spiritual roots and unlocking the God-given identity of father or mother within you.